The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Sports Talk 1240 right here on AM 1240 WGBB. Merry Christmas, everybody. It's a Christmas edition of the program. I'm Jake Asman, joined alongside Ben Beatty, who's filling in for Dan Buta tonight. For those who don't know Ben, he's another Ithaca College student, and he's joining us here from the 8 to 9 o'clock hour. So, Ben, welcome to the studios here in West Babylon, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240. Merry Christmas.
Thanks a lot, Jake. Happy to be here on this lovely Christmas day. If you're into that kind of thing.
For those who may not be familiar with you, though, Ben, why don't you give everyone a quick idea? This is what we always do. The whole, what type of teams do you root for? I know you're wearing a Steven Matz sweatshirt, so
of course.
Being a Met fan, that's a given. We all know that. Anyone who knows you knows you're a Met fan. But for those maybe new to you, I guess, what other teams do you root for?
Some will call me a Jim. Jets, Islanders, Mets.
Okay.
Underdog New York sports teams. That's sort of my forte. It's a tough life, but I choose to lead it.
So you're
New
York,
I am.
You're a New York Met fan, first and foremost.
We'll
get to baseball later on in the program. We're also going to talk about the Islanders, because I know we're both big New York Islander hockey fans. But we're going to open up tonight's show, and the number, we'll throw it out there, 631-888-8811. We're taking you until 9 o'clock here on Sports Talk 1240. We're going to open with some Christmas basketball. The Knicks played earlier today against the Celtics. We'll get to them in just a moment, but the game of the day was the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Warriors rematch of the finals from the past 2 years, and same result as last year's NBA Finals. The Cleveland Cavaliers, they take down the Warriors 109-108. It was a 14-point deficit at the start of the fourth quarter, and just like how the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead, well, they also blew a 14-point lead going into the fourth quarter today. What a performance down the stretch by the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, what a game overall, Jake. I mean, LeBron and Kyrie just completely flipped the switch in that fourth quarter. Absolutely dominated the Golden State Warriors. And really, this was obviously a finals preview for the NBA.
It should be.
It should be.
Let's just fast forward to June right now. I mean, we all joke and we all make the comments, oh, the NBA regular season, it doesn't mean anything. We already know the teams that are going to the finals. That may be true. But if we do get these two teams going in the finals, I'll gladly sign up for 7 more games of these two teams going at it. We probably have the game of the NBA season on December 25th, and it's unfortunate because, you know, what do we have to look forward to until June? Not much, because when you really put it in perspective, these two teams were so far and away better than every other team in their respective conferences, in my opinion, that you look around the league and it's like, you know what? Let's get Cavs Warriors again. Let's fast forward to June, because what we saw today on ABC in Cleveland was unbelievable. Just great basketball. How about at the end today, Kyrie Irving, who finished with 7 steals. He makes the play of the day, the bucket, once again, the game-winning bucket to take down Golden State. And it just really feels like the Cavs, no matter what Golden State tries to do to make adjustments, the Cavs just find a way to win these games late. They've now won 4 straight games, of course, over the Golden State Warriors.
And I was going to say, especially looking forward to June, because many people, including myself for a minute, were saying, just give it to Golden State now, after they signed Kevin Durant. This is an unstoppable force. This is a team that's special. You've got 2 MVPs just in your starters. You know, you've got some great presence on the bench. Sean Livingston, it's a deep team. They're the most complete team on paper. But
and you're right. They added Kevin Durant to a team that was
exactly
coming off a 73-win season. And we all thought, you're right, just give it to the Golden State Warriors. But I think what Cleveland showed you is, can't just give it to them. Cleveland with LeBron James is the best player on the planet. Always will be going forward as long as he's playing at the level that he's at right now. And with Kyrie Irving really emerging as a guy that we knew was really good, but after what we saw him do in the NBA Finals a year ago, I think he's getting the respect that he deserves. You know, you can't rule out Cleveland. I think Cleveland, say whatever you want about the Golden State Warriors, and they might be the best team. They still might win the NBA championship in June. But Cleveland's going to make it interesting. Anyone who thought that the Warriors, just because they added Kevin Durant, they were just going to walk over LeBron James and the Cavs, that's
nope.
Clearly not going to be the case.
No, absolutely not. I mean, we all know LeBron is a special force in the NBA. He's one of the greatest players to ever touch the basketball, to ever hit the hardwood. But Kyrie Irving is really emerging as an NBA superstar and a very versatile player. You know, he's getting numbers on every end of the ball. And the way he played against Klay Thompson, who was playing very strong defense on him in the fourth quarter today, absolutely fantastic performance. Cleveland is really going to give Golden State a run for their money if and probably when this NBA Finals match submerges.
And you're right. And I think when you look at Golden State, as good as they are and what they were able to do, down the stretch, they struggled. Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. that final play, didn't even get it off. And you could say, was he fouled? Should have something been called? But let's be honest here, folks. You're not going to get a call on the road in that circumstance. They're going to let players play. And how about Richard Jefferson down the stretch making the plays? And whether you thought he fouled on that final play, that's one thing. But he was great. And Cleveland just has guys that are gritty. They find ways to win. Iman Shumpert had a big three at the end there. LeBron, we know what he could do. We know how good Kyrie is. But even Kevin Love, I think, has taken another step forward this year. He's probably playing his best year in Cleveland out of the 3 years he's been there now, going into his third season. This Cleveland team is the real deal, man. And anyone who didn't think that they could stand a chance against the Warriors with Durant, I think this game is really an eye-opener for you, because down 14 in the fourth quarter, they could have just mailed it in and said, you know what, it doesn't mean anything. We're still the NBA champs. Who cares? They found a way. This game meant something to both teams, and the way that Cleveland was able to play down the stretch, I think is very telling.
And I think that's really what puts the two teams apart, is Golden State is stacked. They're going to go out every night, and they're going to give you a hard time. You've got Andre Iguodala, Finals MVP, coming off the bench. I mean, this is an NBA superstar coming off the bench. You've got incredible depth, but on Cleveland, you've got guys like Richard Jefferson. You've got maybe guys that aren't living up to their full potential, guys like Kevin Love. You've got guys like Iman Shumpert. You've got guys like J.R. Smith, guys who are going to grit and grind to the very last second. And that is where Cleveland really has the edge against Golden State. Golden State may have more talent. May have more talent just, you know, up and down the roster. But Cleveland has the best player in the world right now, Kyrie Irving, who's emerging as one of the best players in this league. And then you've got guys who are just going to grit and grind away. And that's really what sets Cleveland apart and allows them to be the really only threat in this league against the Golden State Warriors.
And how about this week in Cleveland sports? And Powers, a known Cleveland sports fan and an Ithaca College professor of ours, he actually tweeted this. And I thought it was worth reading on the air because, you know, as a Cleveland sports fan, other than winning the title, Cleveland sports, not known for a lot of happiness. So Edwin Encarnacion signs with the Cleveland Indians. That's to start the week off. Then the Browns actually win a game, and not only does the Cleveland Browns, who at the time were 0-14 going into their game this past Saturday, not only do they win yesterday, but they might have cost themselves a chance at the number one overall pick until the San Francisco 49ers actually won themselves, and Cleveland maintained their spot as the team with the worst record in the National Football League. So the Browns win, and they get a huge break. And Cleveland Cavaliers, I mean, we knew they won the title in June over the Warriors, but then they just reaffirmed the fact that, hey, they're still the champs. So a damn good week in Cleveland to be a Cleveland sports fan. So if you're Jack Powers, who I'm sure is listening, got to enjoy these weeks when you take them, right, Jack? All three of your Cleveland sports teams coming up big for you.
Yeah, it's been a great week to be a Cleveland sports fan. I never really thought I'd hear myself say that sentence, or I'd hear anyone really say that sentence.
Ever.
It's been a tough time as a Cleveland sports fan, but now they've got Edwin Encarnacion. They're probably AL favorites again. I mean, you got to put them against Boston in that rotation, but we all know how pitchers fare in Boston in their first seasons a lot of the time. So we'll have to see what's going to happen, but Cleveland, it's looking up. It's looking up.
631-888-8811, the number to call if you want to talk about the Cavs and Warriors. Jake Asman here with Ben Beatty filling in for Dan Butyk. Ben making his Sports Talk 1240 debut. And one more point on this game. It's not a big deal because we're going to be talking about what we were just talking about, the fact that the Warriors blew a big lead and that Cleveland found a way to win. But the foul at the end of the game that was not called, that's another storyline. But what I really want to talk about is at the end of the game, there was a made shot by, I think it was Klay Thompson. Clearly, it came after the shot clock. Mm-hmm. The shot clock clearly went off. It was very obvious watching in real time. The announcers, they were all over right away.
Passed.
Ball was nowhere near released on time. The shot clock had gone off, and then Klay Thompson, I think it was, shot the basketball. And the officials took time to review the play. Cleveland didn't have any timeouts. So what did Cleveland get a chance to do? They got a chance to draw up another play, and it ended up being the Kyrie Irving game winner. And that can't happen. It gave Cleveland an extra timeout. They took advantage of the rule, which they should. But the NBA's got to look into it. And Mike Breen, Mark Jackson, and Jeff Van Gundy were all over this on the broadcast. I mean, these officials reviewing things that are so obvious, it's not worth the time it takes to review it, and it's just not worth, as a fan watching this, going, well, why is Cleveland getting an extra timeout? That's not fair. They're out of timeouts. They shouldn't be rewarded with a timeout because the officials are taking a look at something. They got to fix that rule. And then Steph Curry, they pointed it out in the broadcast, he was able to substitute from on the bench to go back into the game during that shot clock issue. You can't sub there. There was no timeout in the game. It was an officials review. So the end there was not properly officiated by the referees, and it's something the NBA has to look into. I know it's we're just picking things here out of an amazing game, but the announcers were all over, and it's worth noting, Cleveland really got a big break at the end of getting that extra timeout.
And, yeah, this just goes down to the fact that that's a flawed system. I mean, you can't do that. You can't have that in the game. That's not how it should be. Cleveland should not have that timeout, and it's arguable that it could have cost Golden State this game. Doesn't necessarily mean much. Golden State and Cleveland are still the two best teams in the league, but down the stretch, as it goes to the finals, that could be a very costly error on the NBA officiating.
631-888-8811 is the number to call to get involved. We're talking Cavs and Warriors after Cleveland took down the Golden State Warriors 109-108. And let's open up the phone lines now. Jake in Florida, you start us off. Jake, what's going on?
Hey, fellas, how you doing? I hope the weather's not too terrible up there.
It's not terrible. I'm just not as good as wherever you are in Florida, I'd imagine.
It's been a festive Hanukkah. We've had some good time with this cold weather.
And a Merry Christmas.
And a Merry Christmas.
And a Merry Christmas and Hanukkah to you guys as well. Today we had 88 degrees and sunny, so I don't know how New York was doing today.
Beautiful.
Well, I'm very jealous of you, but you know what? New York is what it is. It could be cold, could be warm. Right now, it's kind of in the middle. I think it was in the mid-40s today at one point.
Well, that's not too bad. Up in Michigan, New York, I'm sure it's negative 20, so.
That is true. That I can confirm.
It's an improvement.
Can I tell you, Jake, nothing is as hot as Cleveland sports right now, though.
That is true.
That is very true.
That is for sure. And just Warriors, Cavs, guys, just want a brief note on that. Can we just skip the rest of the regular season here and jump to the NBA Finals? I'm not a huge NBA guy, as I'm sure you fellas know that, but I'm not a huge NBA guy, and it seems to me that we're just wasting our time with 82 games and however many playoff games just to get to what we know will be the Warriors and Cavs in the final.
And it's funny you made that point, Jake, and we totally agree with you, and thanks for the call. When you look at the situation with the NBA, the regular season, it doesn't mean all that much. You have guys sitting out regular season games. Just last week, LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love sat out a game against Memphis, and that was a big story. But you look at the situation with the NBA, and I'll tell you what, as bad as the regular season is at times, it's for these big games. We had probably the best game you're ever going to see in the regular season earlier today between these two teams. I'll gladly sign up for an NBA Finals rematch, the third time these two teams will go at it, and I'll gladly take seven more games of what we saw today. You're right. Just skip the June. If we could do that right now, I'm with you. I'd do it. It's unfortunate that we got to wait until June to probably see these two teams go back at it again in a seven-game series. But if we do get that, it will be well worth the wait if we get a game like we did last finals. Those seven-game series was terrific. And in this year's finals, if we get a seven-game series between these two teams playing for a title, not much more you can ask as a basketball fan.
I agree. I mean, these are the two teams that are going to make it. It's just how it is. You know, we don't need to we could skip the regular season, but we're not going
to. We don't have time machines.
We don't have time machines. We can't do that. But I'm not disappointed with that. I'm not disappointed with this outcome of Cavs-Warriors in the finals.
Now, as a Knicks fan, it's frustrating because, you know, your ceiling is only, you know, maybe you win a playoff round and then you're going to lose to Cleveland or another team in the East anyway. That's fine. But from a basketball fan standpoint, if we get these two teams in the finals and as long as LeBron James is healthy, I can't see a scenario where the Cavs aren't there. And for the Warriors, I know the Spurs are good, but I just don't see a team taking down Golden State way too much firepower. If we get these two teams and we have a great NBA Finals like we did a year ago, the regular season, we won't think much of it because we'll all be focused in on those seven games that could be going on between the Cavs and the Warriors. It's a long wait, but the payoff is worth it if we get a great game and a great series like we got earlier today.
And I will say something else. Basketball is really a huge sport on athletic displays. And although I love a good Cinderella story, when you've got LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, and all these guys just going head-to-head for it all, for everything, especially if it comes down to a decisive Game 7 again, that's just awesome. That's exactly what the league wants. It's what I want to see.
Well, these two teams, they
As
play
a Nets
basketball
fan,
the right
I have nothing
way.
To look for.
Well, I'm a Knicks fan, so even though it's a little better than the Nets situation right now, you know at the end of the day, the Cavs and the Warriors, they're in a class of their own, and they proved it out there today. I mean, this is a one-point game between two teams that played seven games a year ago to determine the outcome. And I think the fact that Cleveland won this game and they were able to take down the Warriors, it only adds more to the storyline of, well, Kevin Durant is now a part of this rivalry. And now all of a sudden, not only is Kevin Durant in this rivalry, but the first time they went up against Cleveland, they lost. So does he make a difference? The storyline kind of adds more to it as we keep going. And these two teams will meet again at some point in the regular season in Golden State. Not sure when that game will be. We can look that up and get that to you. But you look at these two teams, they're clearly the best teams. and we keep talking about it. The regular season doesn't mean all that much. We understand that. But as a basketball fan, let's get a great NBA Finals between the Cavs and the Warriors, and we'll gladly sign up for that, I think, any day of the week.
Yeah, I'd love it, and I can't wait.
And you're right. These two teams, athletic ability, and we keep saying it, but it's so true. When you have players like LeBron and Kevin Durant, two generational talents, and Steph Curry, the winner of back-to-back MVP awards, going at it, they are going to be the best teams. Deal with it and watch it and enjoy it like we did today. But let's get to the Knicks now, Ben, because they're 16-14. They came into today's game with a chance to get the three games over 500 again, or four games over 500, excuse me. And they suffered a setback to the Boston Celtics, who now are 18-13. The Knicks, they have two wins against teams with a winning record, so this would have been a nice way for them to put themselves back on the map, reestablish themselves as a team in front of a big audience on Christmas at Madison Square Garden, a team that is for real in the Eastern Conference with a team like the Celtics that they're directly competing with, not only in the division, but for prime playoff positioning behind Cleveland and Toronto. And the Knicks kind of really blew an opportunity today. They did not shoot the ball well. They only shot the ball in spurts late in that third quarter. Melo kind of got hot after a rough first half from him. But for the Knicks, it's one of those games where they didn't play enough defense. They allowed the Celtics to score, I think, 119 points. At halftime, they trailed 56-48, and Melo only had one field goal. So they were kind of in and out throughout the course of the game. And at the end of the day, the Knicks, when they kind of came back in the game, eventually tied it up. When they needed a big stop, they couldn't get it, as we saw Avery Bradley hit that big three at the end to put the Celtics up three, and it turned out to be the game winner.
No, but to the credit of the Knicks, Jake, they salvaged this game. They made it an opportunity.
But are there moral victories? Like, if you're Isaac,
no. And Jeff Hornacek addressed that. A loss is a loss on the quote-unquote comeback, which is good. He's got a winning mentality in that clubhouse. He's got some great veteran leadership. You know, a young talent, Kristaps Porzingis, but this team was outscored 34-20 in the second quarter after Boston went on that 7-for-14 run from the three from behind the arc. So the Knicks really salvaged this one. They made it something, and it could have been a blowout. This is a good Knicks team, but as you said, Jake, they were too streaky. They couldn't close. They didn't play the right type of defense. They'll develop the team further, and we'll see what happens.
We'll see with this Knicks team. I think the biggest thing that we saw from them today is that, hey, they could play well in spurts. They could play well against teams they should beat. But when they play a really good team, do they have enough? Are they at a point where they could beat the Celtics? This is a game they could have won today. And I know that they did not play well in that second quarter. The Celtics, we just talked about it. They got outscored them 34-20 in the second quarter. But this is a game that the Knicks could have won if they just played a little more defense. And they didn't do that today. And that's disappointing, because if they just made a couple more stops here and there, they win this game despite the fact that they did not have a lot of assists on their makes. The Knicks only had 11 assists on their 41 buckets today. They relied too heavy on isolation. And despite all that, they're in the game against a very good team in the Eastern Conference. But when you allow 119 points, most of the time you're going to lose. I don't care if you score 114 points. The real shame of the Knicks offense, though, is the fact that Derrick Rose played as well as he did. Yeah, again, really, for most of the year, when he's out there, he's been great. D. Rose today, 10 of 19 from the field, and he finished with 25 points. They wasted a great performance from D. Rose, and it's unfortunate because even though Carmelo Anthony scored 29 points, he didn't shoot the ball well in that first half. And then when he got hot, looked like maybe he got tired there. The Knicks never were really in sync, and they still scored 114 points, but it comes down to the fact they allowed 119. That's not good enough in the NBA.
No, but this is a good team. You can't take that away from them. Porzingis dropped another double-double today. They looked good in streaks, though. They need to become more complete. When you look at you, you're seeing around the court, they have contributions from the guys that they expected to have contributions from.
They need to find more consistency.
Right. They need to find more consistency, more depth, and really become a team as opposed to some guys who are really good basketball players. You know, as we said earlier, Carmelo Anthony is an elite scorer. He may not be everything, though. He's proven that he's not the kind of player like LeBron James who can carry a team on his back. And the Knicks need to find places. They need to, you know, fill the holes and become a team that can, you know, win these types of games and be resilient in every situation.
And what kills the Knicks defensively is the fact that Joakim Noah was supposed to be kind of a guy that does everything on defense, rebounds, can guard the big man underneath, could give a blow to Carmelo and Kristaps Porzingis.
So and he grabbed 12 today.
He did, but at the same time, Joakim Noah is a guy that he needs to be more locked down on defense. Al Horford is toasting the team late. Joakim Noah is nowhere to be found because his offense is so bad they can't even put him in there at times with this team. So they have some issues if you're a Knicks fan. It's positive in the sense that they're 16-14. They overcame a pretty rough start to their year. They're 11-5 at home. But a team like the Celtics that you're directly competing against, the Knicks got to find ways to win these games. Too much isolation down the stretch. They got to find ways to get the ball to Kristaps Porzingis when he's feeling it. And they got to find ways to get the ball to Derrick Rose. It's too much isolation. And that's not all Carmelo's fault. That's on Hornacek to draw up better plays, to get this team in a better rhythm. And you can kill the offense, but it really comes down to defense. The Knicks have not played well on defense for most of this year. They've been able to overcome it at times, but today they couldn't when they allowed 119 points and lost.
Defense is a lot more of a team effort than scoring is, and this Knicks team just needs to click. They have to click. They're a new team.
But this is around the time when you want to see it start to click. I think a lot of people kind of view the Christmas area of the schedule on the NBA for NBA teams as the time where, you know what, you establish yourself early on in the season. You're about a quarter way into the year. Now let's see something. Show us something going forward. And the Knicks coming up got games against Atlanta, got games against the Pelicans, got some winnable games coming up against teams that they should beat. Let's see what they do coming up this week.
And we saw Rose and Noah miss some time in the preseason. So now, as you said, Jake, as this, you know, quarter mark in the season approaches, we've seen Derrick Rose pick it up. We've got to see Joakim Noah settle into his role and become a part of this team.
631-888-8811. Back to the phone lines we go, and let's go to Neil in the Catskill Mountains. Neil, what's going on?
Hey, Jake and Benjamin, how are you?
Neil, what's up? Thanks for the call.
What's going on, guys? You know, I hear you guys talking about the Knicks. Defensively, obviously, it's been an issue all year. You guys kind of talked about what happened today against the Celtics. If this continues with the play on the defensive side of the ball, do you think that they could be a five seed or maybe even better? Or is it something where if their defense doesn't improve, they could be a 7 or 8 seed?
I think the Knicks are more in that 4 or 5 range than they are 7 or 8. But you're right. If they don't play better defense, they're going to be right. I think what we know about this Knicks team through the first, you know, they're 16-14. So basically 30 plus games they played so far this year. I think the Knicks are a playoff team. I do. I think Phil Jackson has made them a playoff team.
I agree.
How good they are, though, Neil, will depend on their defense. They've shown at times they can play defense. That's why when they give up 119 points at home on Christmas Day, it's frustrating because you know they have the capabilities to play much better on the defensive side of the ball. They haven't done it consistently, and that's their biggest issue.
And Neil, I think this Knicks team is going to. I don't really see it as an if. I see it as more of a, it's going to happen for this Knicks team. It's a newer season. We're still in the beginning of it, and it's a totally new team. You've got a new look on your roster. As I said, defense is something that you need to settle into. You need to find a groove in regards to. So I think the Knicks will fall into a defensive groove, and I think they're going to look at more of a 4 or 5 seed team.
No, absolutely. I totally agree. But it just seems like if the defense doesn't improve, I think, like you guys talked about, at this point in the season, it's kind of like, you know, we're about getting to a quarter of the way through. It's Christmas. I mean, this is the type of this is the time of the season where if the Knicks are going to put it together defensively, because I agree with you. I mean, it's a shame they wasted an offensive performance like they had today, especially from Derrick Rose. It's a shame. They got to win these games. When Rose puts up the numbers he did today, and they're playing that well offensively, especially at home, this is a game they got to win.
You're absolutely right, and that's what's frustrating.
Absolutely.
And thanks for the call, Neil. I think the biggest thing that with the Knicks, they're going to go as far as their defense will take them. Do they want to be a top 5 seed in the East? And they got to get better on defense. Joakim Noah, in particular, has to give them a lot more. And the Knicks are one of those teams where on any given night, they could play great on offense and they could be in these games. But when they need a big stop, can they get the stop? And they got it a couple times today late when they were coming back. But then when they did come back and then the Celtics hit a big shot, that was the end. They got to be more consistent from start to finish for them to really take that next step as a team. And you look at this Knicks team, where are they? Well, I think they're a playoff team. How good are they, as Neil was talking about? Well, are they a 7 or 8 seed, or are they serious about wanting to be a 3 or 4 or 5 seed in the Eastern Conference? And that's big, because you know what? If you're a 3 or 4 seed, all of a sudden, you're a team that is playing in the first round of a playoff series at home. You have home field advantage, home court advantage. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you're a 7 or 8 seed. You're playing Toronto or Cleveland. You're losing in 5 or 6 games max. I mean, where are the Knicks? How good do they want to be in year one in Hornacek and year two of Porzingis? It's a question mark. We don't know what they are yet, but for certainly they're not Cleveland, because we know Cleveland's one, Toronto's two. Can the Knicks be 3 or 4? They can, but it starts with the defense.
They can, and you know, we knew this team was not going to be a powerhouse entering this season. They could have been, they could be a good team, and they still are a very good team. It falls entirely, though, as we said, on the defense. They've got the offense to back it up for the time being, but I think they need to start clicking now. Sooner rather than later is obviously preferable in the situation. And they definitely have the potential to achieve that 3 seed. I don't know if it's likely. I'd put them more at a 4 or 5. But that 3 seed is in reach for the Knicks if the defense can pick it up. They've got the offense to carry them there.
They're right there with teams in the Eastern Conference. They've beaten some of them, but this next week will be telling. They got 3 games coming up now after they just finished their homestand. At Atlanta on Wednesday, at New Orleans on Friday. The Pelicans are a team they must beat. Atlanta, another one of those teams in the Eastern Conference that's right there. The Knicks beat them at home earlier in the year. It'll be telling. This upcoming week for the Knicks, we'll learn a lot more about them. And then they got to go to Houston on New Year's Eve. That's not going to be easy. They're probably not winning that game. So they better find ways to beat Atlanta and New Orleans. Go 2-1 on this 3-game road trip. Then you come back home against Orlando and Milwaukee. You start talking about a team that could string together some wins here. But if they're going to be the team that we think they can be in the East, this road trip I think will be a nice telling sign of where they are. Can they rebound after a tough loss to the Boston Celtics? Now you're going on the road. You got a couple days off. You don't play till Wednesday. Show us something here, Knicks. Have a big week. Go 2-1 on this road trip and continue to build on what we've seen early on in the year that's allowed them to be 2 games over .500 and 11-5 at home, respectively.
And I think they can absolutely make a great run on this road trip, Jake. I mean, as you said, the Hawks and the Pelicans you have to beat. Mm-hmm. Will they give Houston a fight? Probably. They'll give them a fight.
They're playing the Mike D'Antoni, the former Pringles man, their former head coach. And in all seriousness, the Rockets are having some season, man. It's not going to be an easy game.
No, it's not going to be an easy game at all, so but you gotta win the, there's a possibility.
If you want to have a good road trip, you got to beat Atlanta on Wednesday, and you got to beat the New Orleans Pelicans on Friday. Those are 2 games that, if you're a Knicks fan, you got to look at and say, let's get these wins, let's get back on track, and then you know, you take whatever happens against Houston. Hopefully you have a good effort and you see what you got. But the Pelicans are 11-21. That's a game that the Knicks definitely should win. The real game, the real swinger on the road trip, is going to be their first game against the Atlanta Hawks, who are 15-15 in the Eastern Conference. So they're right at the 500 mark. The Knicks are only a game better than the Hawks. It's on the road. Let's see what the Knicks have. There'll be a lot of Knicks fans in the building in Atlanta, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm curious to see how this team is going to match up with Milwaukee in those back-to-back games. Milwaukee sitting right at the 500 mark on the year at 14-14. Two kind of similar teams, in a way. They've got some great scoring, but it's going to be a test of the Knicks' defense to, you know, shut down a Bucks team that has had some pretty good stretches early on.
So we'll see if the Knicks can get better, but once again, the number to call is 631-888-8811. Jake Asman here with Ben Beatty on Sports Talk 1240. We're taking you until 9 o'clock for the second hour of Sports Talk. Eric Getzoff will come your way to fill you from 9 to 10. And now, Ben, before we take our first break of the evening, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about what we were talking about off the air. It's not the Jets. Don't worry. We'll get to the rant a little bit later.
Ooh.
But let's touch on some baseball now, because I know you're a big I know you're a big baseball fan, and we kind of alluded to this when we opened up the show talking about Cleveland.
Yep.
Edwin Encarnacion, he signed with the Cleveland Indians, and you alluded to this just before. Are the Indians now the team in the American League that you look at and you say, well, maybe they're now the favorites to come out of the AL after? I know what Boston did this offseason, but Cleveland, you got to respect what they've done. They went to the World Series a year ago. They beat Boston in the playoffs. Are they the favorites in the AL, you think?
In my humble opinion, yes. I am behind Cleveland all the way. I picked Cleveland at the right before the 2016 season to be the champions of the Central because their pitching at full health is a strikeout machine. Corey Kluber, Danny Salazar, Carlos Carrasco are all capable of having 200 strikeout seasons. And Corey Kluber has really proven himself to be an elite pitcher in this game with some of the best breaking stuff we've seen in years. Cleveland is the favorite to win the AL right now, and now they've got the guy who's going to drive in, who drove in 127 runs last year, led the league. Last Cleveland Indian to lead the league in RBIs, Manny Ramirez, in 1999 when he drove in 165.
Can you just think about that for a second?
That's unbelievable.
165
RBIs. Runs.
Yeah, he was doing that clean. But you look at the Cleveland Indians, and they're a team that we know they're very good. They have Andrew Miller now for the full year, too.
They're very good.
They're really good. They're a really good team. Red Sox fans would argue that they're still the favorites in the AL, but I'm with you. I think until Boston proves that they are a for-real team, until David Price wins a playoff game, I don't want to hear about how great their starting staff is, because you know what? David Price has been nothing but terrible in the postseason. It's not a small sample size, either.
No.
He did this with the Rays. He did it with the Blue Jays last year. And then with Boston this past season, He was horrible. He was horrible in his one start. He did not give him a chance to even win that baseball game, and that's why they went down to three games to the same Indians team we're talking about. Cleveland's having some week, though, man. They got Encarnacion. We just talked about the Browns and the Cavs before. But I think going into this offseason, you were kind of wondering where those two power bats from the Blue Jays were going to end up. Of course, that's Encarnacion. And, of course, Jose Bautista, who's still available. I think he ends up going back to the Blue Jays to work something out. But it's a big loss for Toronto to lose Edwin, because now with Edwin going to Cleveland, as a Yankee fan, I'm happy because he kills the Yankees and now he's out of the division, but it's a big loss for the Blue Jays.
It's a big loss for the Blue Jays. Edwin Encarnacion's one of the top offensive players in the league. And you know what, Jake? I want to throw out there, I want to see Chris Sale dominate in Boston. It's been proven that some guys can't handle Boston, including David Price in the first half this year. Aces get destroyed in Boston a lot of the time. A lot of the time they can't take the media, and often Boston turns to homegrown pitching. So I want to see Chris Sale dominate like he did with the White Sox and absolutely prove himself as the best pitcher in the American League before
Boston
I pick them as AL
fans. Any little custom jerseys that he has to like to
them. Oh my gosh.
If he pulls that in Boston though, I mean, for the way the media is up there and the attention that
he'll
Red
be
Sox
eaten
get,
alive. And that's why I want to see if he's going to be able to handle it and be the best pitcher in the American League, which he has proven himself to be over the past few years.
And also, as good as the Red Sox are, just touching on them real quick, you look at the Boston Red Sox, and they're going to be starting, it looks like, Pablo Sandoval. We don't know what he's going to bring. They're missing David Ortiz due to him retiring, and they haven't really found an adequate replacement for him just yet. I mean, this is a team that is very good. We know how good they are offensively, but just to kind of just expect them to be able to do what they did last year and replicate it again, that's not easy either.
No.
Plus, they got a Cy Young caliber year out of a pitcher none of us really thought was anything that special. You know, of course, they have a Cy Young pitcher, David Price, and now they traded for Chris Sale. It'll be interesting to see if they're going to be good enough once again to be as good as they were a year ago coming out of the AL East as division winners.
And you are coming off a phenomenal season from Hanley Ramirez. His production is going to be huge because it looks like he's going to be your DH now with Ortiz gone and they signed Mitch Moreland to play first. 286 for Hanley last year, 111 ribbies. That's a great number. 30 homers. Hanley had a great year. Are you going to be able to get that kind of production? If you can't, Boston's offensive season and offensive output is not going to be as strong as it was last year.
And is Rick Porcello winning 22 games again?
No. I doubt it.
Is he going to win another Cy Young? I mean,
possibly.
He'll be good, but he gave him a great year last year.
He gave him a great year, but he proved himself as a bust in Detroit. He was not the pitcher they expected to be. They expected Rick Porcello to be a full-blown ace, and even to possibly be potentially better than Verlander.
And he finally had it in Boston. It'll be interesting to see. I think their season, a lot of it depends on their starting staff, obviously, but their offense, as good as they are, can they duplicate what they did last year without Ortiz, and what are they going to get from Pablo Sandoval? You really have no idea what they're going to get from that position.
No, you have no clue what you're going to get out of Sandoval.
But one thing's for sure, the Edwin Encarnacion addition is a big-time move for the state of power in the American League. You can really make a case for either side. I think we both are in agreement here. We think Cleveland now
definitely
should be the favorites because they beat Boston and they added the RBI leader in the AL. But the real question is what happens going forward with this team? And we'll certainly find out. Spring training, I think, a couple weeks away already. Once we get to the end of the football season, we start focusing on baseball. So
it'll be fun. It's going to be a fun season.
631-888-8811. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 right here on AM 1240. WGBB. And when we come back, we're going to touch on some football. The Giants, they're in the playoffs. The Jets had another meltdown yesterday against the New England Patriots. We'll touch on the state of New York football when we come back right after these words.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak.
capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here in West Babylon, New York, here at the AM 1240 WGBB studios. Jake Asman alongside Ben Beatty, and if you're just joining us, Ben Beatty is filling in for the vacationing Dan Butik. And Ben, good 30 minutes so far. We'll see what you got here as we shift to football. The number to call is 631-888-8811. Let's touch on the New York Giants. They clinched, not because they beat the Eagles on Thursday. We know that didn't happen. But after the New Orleans Saints took down the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Giants clinched a playoff berth. There were a lot of different scenarios that could have got them in. That was the quickest one. It happened. And now the Giants are locked in as the number 5 seed in the NFC. They will be on the road. We don't know where they're going just yet. But from what we've seen from this Giants team, it's kind of the overlining, you know, storyline surrounding them has been Eli's having a bad year. The defense has been terrific. The line for the Giants on the offensive side of the ball has not been good. But do you throw it out now that the playoffs are here and Eli Manning? I mean, the thing with the Giants that we love is the fact that, hey, they've done it before. The last time they were in the playoffs, they won the Super Bowl. The time before that, they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So it seems like, hey, the key for the Giants, just get to the postseason and good things happen. But I'm not so sure that will be the case. But we'll find out. Does this Giants team, in your opinion, are they good enough to go on a run?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got Eli Manning as your quarterback. This guy's proven what he can do in the postseason. He's got ice in his veins. There's definitely capability for this team to make a run, especially when they've got superstardom with Odell Beckham. The offensive line hasn't been great, but the defense has looked pretty good. And this is a team that has some pluses and can definitely make a run if the situation and the schedule is right.
And I think the biggest thing with the Giants is what you just talked about. They have Eli Manning.
They have Eli Manning.
So they have a chance. But the thing with the Giants that concerns me is that this line has not played well.
No.
Eli does not look like the same quarterback that he did during those two Super Bowl runs. Can he flip a switch and turn it on? I'm not going to rule it out. He's done it before, and he's shown you time and time again that when he needs to find a way to win a big game, he's been able to do so. The biggest thing with the Giants is, can they obviously play the defense they've been playing all year, but can this offensive line, can they protect Eli? Can they allow this running game, which hasn't given them much all year? Can they give them something in a postseason game? Because if you're the Giants, you're going on the road. The Giants were 7-1 at home this year. They have not been a good road team, though. They've struggled on the road. We saw on Thursday against the Eagles, they got up to such a bad start, trailing 14-0, 6 minutes into that ballgame. Now at 10-5, the Giants have this Week 17 to rest guys. It doesn't have to be played like a must-win game for them. We'll see what they have, though. I think if you're the Giants, you feel confident because you have Eli Manning. But we don't know who they're going to play. I think a lot of it depends on the matchup. Can they go into Detroit, let's say, and beat the Lions? I think so. Can they beat the Packers? I think they can as well. But if they go into Seattle, which could be another scenario, I don't know if they're beating the Seahawks. A lot of it depends on the matchups, and we'll certainly see. But I think at the end of the day, you look at the Giants, what are they? We'll find out because they're 10-5. They might finish 11-5, 10-6. How good are they, though? We have yet to really see what this team is, because every time we think we figure them out, they go and beat Dallas twice. Then they beat Detroit. Then they lay a stinker on Thursday Night Football, and Eli Manning drops back 63 times and looks awful. I don't know what team this is. We're going to find out soon, though.
This is a team, the Giants, that may not be the best team, but they're the team that can beat the best teams. And they've proven that in 2007 and 2011.
And then they're also a team that could lose to one of the worst teams
exactly.
in the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah,
it's
they
a very
lose to the Eagles,
team.
But they beat the Dallas Cowboys. This
Twice.
Is a team that can turn it, that can turn it on. Will they? I don't know. It's heavily dependent on the schedule. Heavily dependent on who they're going to face.
I'm with you. And how much do the starters play next week if you're the Giants? And that game, as a heads up, was moved to 425. Giants and Redskins next week in Washington. The wild card opponent likely will not be decided until the Green Bay and Detroit Packer game. The Green Bay and Detroit Lion game is decided, which was moved to Sunday Night Football next week. Other possibilities for the Giants, we just touched on it. Atlanta and Seattle, they play at 425 on Sunday. We're not going to know the Giants' opponent until probably till the end of Sunday Night Football a week from now. So who knows? At this time a week from now, Sunday Night Football will be underway between the Detroit Lions and the Green Bay Packers. And that could likely determine the outcome of where the Giants go in week one. The only thing we know with the Giants is, once again, they're locked in as the number five seed. Next week's game for the against the Washington Redskins means nothing for the Giants. Means everything for the Redskins. They need to win and get help. But for the from the Giants' standpoint, they're in the playoffs. They're locked in as a number five seed.
Yeah, and there's no need to play your starters. I mean,
I'd play Eli Manning a half.
I'd play Eli Manning, yeah, at a half. Get it. Leave him warm. But there's just no point.
I mean, the thing is,
it's an outside-decided situation.
It is. And we saw quarterbacks like Derek Carr, who went down yesterday. Oh, Marcus Mariota went
breaks
down.
Breaks my heart.
You know, two teams that were obviously where they were because of their starting quarterback, especially in Oakland. Derek Carr was in the MVP conversation. And the Raiders went from a team that a lot of people thought could be a dark horse Super Bowl team to now we'd be surprised if they even win a game with McGloin, their backup, coming in to play quarterback. It's just an unfortunate spot. If you're the Giants, though, I want Eli to at least go through a week of practice again, go through a game day, maybe have him even play a quarter. But if I'm the Giants, you got to be super careful, man. You don't want to see Eli Manning go down. And I know Eli never goes down. He plays every single game. That's one of the best things you can say about the guy. He's tough as anyone. But you got to be smart about it. You don't want him to maybe be rusty going into that wild card game. You got to balance the how much do you play him with. We're trying to protect him from his own good as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't even want to talk about this. You can't throw Ryan Nassib in a playoff game.
And Ryan Nassib actually, you probably didn't know this, Ryan Nassib was put on IR this week. He suffered an injury at practice, a shoulder injury. They threw him on injured reserve, and the Giants' backup is now Josh Johnson.
Oh, come on.
So,
Did he pitch for the Marlins?
Yeah, maybe. If Eli Manning goes down, they're not winning a game. We all know that.
No,
You're definitely not winning a game with Josh Johnson in there as your starting quarterback. So they got to be smart about Eli. And I think another thing with the Giants has to be, can they rest guys and get healthy? Who else is banged up on this team? Are they in a spot where Eli, we know his situation. They got some guys in the O-line that have been facing injuries. I think anyone that is banged up should not play. Anyone that's healthy, maybe play them a half. Eli, you take extra care with. Maybe you only play them a quarter. But give credit to the Giants, because if I would have told you going into the year this team would be in the playoffs and not even have to play Week 17 to get in, all you Giants fans would have signed up for that. So really, a terrific job by the New York football Giants getting in here with one game to go, week 17 of their season, coming up against the Redskins a week from today at 4:25.
It's going to be a good game. It'll be a fun game. We'll see what happens.
Back to the phones we go, 631-888-8811. He's been waiting on hold a little bit, but let's go to JJ in upstate New York. JJ, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for bringing me on the show.
Hey, thanks for calling, JJ. What's going on? How's the weather up there? Is it cold?
Actually, it's not too bad. It's about it's just dipped below freezing, but it was nice, mid-30s, 40s, which is shorts and T-shirts weather up here.
There you go. What part of upstate New York are you from?
I'm from the greater Syracuse area.
Oh, very nice.
Adamsville, New York, just a little bit northwest of it.
40 degrees in Syracuse, and Cleveland is the AL favorite. What a weird time of year we're at right now. That's bizarre. Anyway, JJ, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just wondering, you guys kind of talked about the Giants and, you know, their shot at possibly another run, but it seems like everyone's already given, already made the Super Bowl matchup, New England and Dallas. But, I mean, the Giants have already beaten the Cowboys three times this year. Do you think, say they meet in either the divisional round or the championship, NFC championship, you think the G-men can beat them again? I mean, it's tough to beat a team three times in one year.
I'm with you. It's tough. I think they can do it just because history has shown you the Giants have beaten Dallas in a playoff game. They did it on their way to winning the Super Bowl the first time in 2007. The biggest thing is, you're right, it's tough to beat a team three times. I don't know if the Giants will win that game. Can they do it? I'm never counting Eli Manning out until someone beats him. Because you take out Eli Manning, his first ever playoff game against the Carolina Panthers, where he was just horrible. He wasn't ready to even be playing in that game. I think it was his second year in the league. Eli Manning's postseason record's 8-2. I mean, the guy plays big-time football when he's in these spots. So I don't count out the Giants. I don't know if they have this run in them, though. I don't know. If they go to Seattle, I don't think they're winning. And if they play Dallas in a divisional round, can they beat the Cowboys? I think they could, but I got to give Dallas some credit here. I mean, they are the best team in the football this year for a reason. They deserve, at least in the NFC anyway. It's tough. When I pick them, I got to see where they are if we get to that point. But to answer your question, JJ, can they win? Absolutely. Will they? We'll find out. I'm not so sure.
If the Giants can get to the Super Bowl, they've definitely got a shot. Can they get there, though? That's what you're saying, Jake. I mean, it all comes down to that. It all comes down to the if.
It's so tough with postseason football because you just don't know.
You don't
That's
know.
That's one of the great we were just talking about the NBA to open up the show, how can we just fast forward to June for the NBA Finals. I can't fast forward to February 3rd for the Super Bowl because I have no idea who's going to be in the Super Bowl. You really don't. It's wide open. You can make a case for a lot of different teams, especially in the NFC. I think in the AFC, the Patriots, for good reason, are overwhelming favorites.
Yeah.
But in the NFC, you can make a case for the Giants, as we were doing. You can make a case for, obviously, Dallas and Seattle and Green Bay's red hot. If they get in next week and beat Detroit and win that division, who's going to tell you Green Bay doesn't have it in them the way they're playing down the stretch? So you just don't know. You know, there's so many teams in the NFC that can make a serious run at it.
A lot of great quarterbacks that could just break out of nowhere. Two polar opposite Eli Mannings. Which one are we going to see? All going to come down to that.
Good Eli, bad Eli.
Mediocre Eli.
You know, mediocre Eli hasn't even shown up at times this year. But that's the thing. It's Eli Manning. You don't really know. It's kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde situation with him. A lot of it's not his fault. Of course, the offensive line has a lot to do with it. They have not done a good job for most of this season. But can they turn it on in the playoffs? That is the big question mark surrounding this Giants team. And getting to the Jets now, the big question mark is, well, can Eli Manning turn it on? At least the Giants have a quarterback. The biggest question with the Jets is, who started week 17 against the Buffalo Bills? We have no idea. Ryan Fitzpatrick, of course, the man that has nine lives, gets into the game against the Patriots. And that 41-3 shellacking that I unfortunately had to watch yesterday. But this Jets team is an absolute mess. Thankfully, one game left in the season, and it will be the hot seat bowl next week at MetLife Stadium between Todd Bowles and, ironically, Rex Ryan, who might be coaching in his final game up in Buffalo against his former team in the New York Jets. But what a mess that the Jets are right now. I have no idea who's going to start a quarterback next year, let alone have no idea who's going to start a quarterback for the Jets next week.
Next year, let's talk about next week.
Can
first.
We see Hackenberg play, possibly? I mean, can we get him out of the carbonite and let him get out there on the field? I have no idea what Todd Bowles and McKagan are going to decide to do next week, but there's no reason why Ryan Fitzpatrick should be playing next Sunday against the Bills. No reason at all, but it's the Jets, so if he's playing next Sunday, don't be surprised is all I'm going to say
that. Just why? I just don't get it. I don't get what goes through the thoughts of the Jets. I don't understand what they're doing. I never understand why they do what they do. Oh. It doesn't make any sense. Well, this year just makes no sense.
Nothing makes sense.
Nothing makes sense from this year. Everything just went wrong. We saw one good game, one really good game the Jets played in Buffalo earlier this year.
And
Great game.
The funny part about that game, and both you and I are actually went to that game together, your first ever football game.
Yes, it was.
Fitzpatrick played about as well as you could possibly play in
that
game.
He had a phenomenal game.
Threw for 400 yards against Rex Ryan's defense. He was terrific. Didn't turn the ball over, made play after play. Decker and Brandon Marshall had some big grabs. Onunwa.
The team looks so
promising. I mean, the Jets put up 37 on Rex Ryan's defense. Then the following week, it all went downhill. Fitz throws six interceptions against the Kansas City Chiefs, and that's when the Jets' season really spiraled out of control. And it's kind of funny, the only good moment of the Jets' season we happen to be at up in Buffalo, and if you would have told me then that this team would be sitting here 4-11 going into their final game of the season against the Bills and what we thought could be, you know, a game that could decide who's going to the playoffs between two teams that likely were competing for wild card spots this year. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable to fathom where the season's gone for the Jets. And the big question is, does Todd Bowles make it? Personally, I think the Jets will give Todd Bowles another year. I think he will keep his job going into 2017.
I mean, they should. I mean, he doesn't call the offensive plays. You can't really entirely blame him for that. A lot has just gone wrong. There's bad, you know, there's bad vibes in the clubhouse. He doesn't have the team under his control.
And those bad vibes start with Sheldon Richardson, who is an absolute clown. We'll talk about him for a second. Not only is he going to be traded, but he's played so poorly, and he has disheveled so many of his teammates, including Brandon Marshall. After the game yesterday, Sheldon Richardson was asked about Brandon Marshall's comments that it was an embarrassing performance by the New York Jets. And what does Sheldon Richardson say? He should be embarrassed, referring to Brandon Marshall. I mean, you got to be kidding me, Sheldon. Get off this team already. The Jets are going to try and trade him. They should have traded him when they had the chance earlier this season at the trade deadline. But now his value is so low. The Jets are kind of in a no-win situation with Sheldon Richardson because they're going to trade him, get him off the team, and they're going to get nothing pretty much in return for him. He's just been terrible, and he's the very definition of wasted talent. When you think of how bad this Jets season has been, it really starts with it's really a microcosm of this team this year, just looking at Sheldon Richardson's performance.
He truly embodies the 2016-17 Jets season. I mean, it's just an absolute mess. You have no idea why it's even happening. He's being ridiculous, and his time in New York is up. Todd Bowles, though, I think deserves another year, especially because you fire Todd Bowles. Who are you going to?
Well, that's the issue.
Jeff Fisher?
And the thing is, when you evaluate an NFL coach, can you adequately say that Todd Bowles can't coach after 2 years? When they were 10-6, I didn't hear people saying
10-6 last year
that he couldn't coach, and I know they didn't get in the playoffs, but you know what? As bad as Ryan Fitzpatrick has been this year, he was great last year. That helped them get to a point where they did finish 10-6. And now all of a sudden Fitzpatrick comes back. It was the right move at the time to bring him back. He plays terrible. I know Todd Bowles has not had a good season. His staff has not had a good year. The defense is underachieved. There's been issues in the locker room. But you know what? At the end of the day, when Ryan Fitzpatrick's your starting quarterback and he's the lowest rated NFL quarterback in the league, it's tough to win games.
It's tough.
And at 4-11, I don't know if I want to just get rid of the coach because, A, you made a great point of who you're bringing in. And then you kind of feel like the Cleveland Browns. You're going to fire a coach after 2 years after you just fired your previous GM, John Isaac, after 2 years as well. You're a mess if you're the Jets. And if I'm Woody Johnson, I'm giving Bowles one more year for more than anything else, just a stability purpose. I don't want to look like the Cleveland Browns of the New York Jets right here.
And going back to that game in Buffalo, we saw the Jets click. We saw them click with a good quarterback under center. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not a good quarterback. You need to put a lot of the blame for the mess of the season that it currently is on Ryan Fitzpatrick's shoulders. It's unfortunate, but you have to. You can't blame Todd Bowles as much as you can blame the simple poor performance
now,
of your quarterback.
Here's the thing. There are a lot of culprits, and you're right. But at the end of the day, it starts with the quarterback. And until the Jets figure that situation out, and when I say until, they've been trying to figure it out for 45 years since Joe Namath left, and they haven't been able to do that. Until they find a way to get sustainable success at that position, nothing else they do really matters. And if you want to fire Todd Bowles, I'm not going to throw up my arms and say, how could they do that? The team has been terrible this year. They've been blown out in their last two games by two divisional opponents. Guys on the team have said they weren't ready to play. There's bickering in the locker room. There's enough there to get a coach fired. Don't get me wrong. What saves Todd Bowles is the fact that he's only in his second year and the team was 10-6 a year ago. If they fire him, I'm not going to say, how could they do that? I understand why they would do that, but sitting here as a Jet fan, I wouldn't fire him. I'd give him one more year, and then if the team is terrible again next year with expectations, you don't just fire Todd Bowles. At that point, you can clean house and fire the general manager and hit the reset button as well. But you fire Todd Bowles, you're letting Mike McCagan pick another coach, then you're stuck with the GM for at least another 2 years because you're not going to then fire that coach after 1 year. You're kind of in a messy situation. That's why you don't normally see head coaches lose their jobs after just two years on the job.
No, I mean, it's sort of similar to the Mets situation a few years ago. You hire Jerry Manuel, the whole team gets hurt in 2009, you give him another shot, 2010, he's gone. Then you hire Terry Collins, and you build the team back up. If Todd Bowles can coach this team to a great season next year, great. And no one's even going to remember this season. Well, they will. But everyone's going to look back at this season and say, all right, he was in development, we gave him some slack, he didn't have a good quarterback, and now he rebounded, and he did a great job with this team.
You want to be careful about coaches that you just run out of town. And Rich Semedia of ESPNNewYork.com wrote an excellent article today, if you haven't seen it, check it out, on this very situation we're discussing with Todd Bowles. The Jets ran Pete Carroll out of town after 1 year. They brought in Rich Kotite. Jet fans, you know how that turned out. Your worst season of franchise history landed you the number one overall pick in the 1996 NFL draft. Pete Carroll turned out to be a pretty damn good coach. Make sure that before you fire Todd Bowles, you know that who you're bringing in to replace him. If you can get John Harbaugh, for example, or Sean Payton, that's one thing. But those guys are not going to be available. I don't know if either of those guys wants to come to New York anyway. And if you're the Jets, Todd Bowles a year ago was this hot coaching commodity. He was this hot coaching candidate. Everyone wanted him. Now all of a sudden, you're going to fire him after just 2 years on the job. I know it's been ugly, but I think for, at the end of the day, stability purposes, you know, where they are as a team right now, you got to hold on to him for at least one more year. And he's been terrible. I'm as passionate and as frustrated as anyone out there. But I think for the purpose of just not firing a coach after 2 years and maintaining some stability in this organization, you can't fire the coach after 2 years. You just can't do it.
No, and I mean, the only argument against firing Todd Bowles is you hire Jeff Fisher, better 8-8 than 4-12.
Mr. 8-8 himself, Jeff Fisher.
Of course.
But at the end of the day, if you're the Jets, what a mess they are.
Oh.
And I just can't wait for the season to be over. We'll move on. We'll go to the Knicks. You got baseball coming up. Just end the season.
Got the Mets coming up.
Football is so unenjoyable for me as a diehard Jet fan when the team is this bad. And we talked about it just before, but the irony that Rex Ryan will be coaching in his final game at MetLife Stadium against his team next week. And fans, if you want to go to a Jet game, I saw tickets earlier were under $10. If you're interested in some Week 17 football between the New York Jets and the Buffalo Bills, if that's something that might interest you there, Ben. I know we paid almost $100.
I was going to say, how much did we pay for those tickets?
These same teams are now worth about $90 less than what we paid for the first time we saw them play.
Just a fiasco. Just a fiasco.
And let's transition now to the to a team that we hold, I think, very near and dear to our hearts, the New York Islanders.
We love them. We love our Islanders.
Brutal start for them.
Then they get horrible.
Then they lose four in a row again, and then the New York Islanders in their last two games, they actually have wins over the Bruins and the Buffalo Sabres at Barclays Center. That was the other night. So now as this team hits the Christmas break and they don't play for a couple days, where is this team right now? The Islanders' record is 13-14-6, so they're one game under the NHL version of 500. Can this team still go on a run? I know you watch them very closely. You're a big Islanders fan. Mm-hmm. But this season has been so disappointing. And there's five teams in the Metro in their own division that are going to make the playoffs. And here are the Islanders with all the expectations that they went to the second round a year ago, off to one of the more disappointing starts in recent memory for their team.
And where the Islanders stand right now, 12 points behind that second wild card spot in the Metro. 12 points. It's closable. It's not necessarily doable. But it could be done if they do it right. This is a team that has great potential on their roster. Obviously, we know what John Tavares could do. But bringing in Andrew Ladd, bringing in Jason Chimera, great moves. They let P.A. Parento go. I don't know. But it's a shame that Matt Barzal didn't develop into what he was supposed to be this season. It's a shame Josh Hosang isn't on the roster. They expected to have more young talent than just Anthony Beauvillier, who's been good. And Anders Lee has turned it on lately. It's a team that really could make a comeback, but not with this squad. Not with this squad. They need to make a move.
You're right. I think the Islanders went into this year saying, hey, we showed signs we're a really good team. These young guys will take another step forward, and you're right. Other than Anthony Beauvillier, they haven't done that much as far as production from the younger guys on the team. You know, a couple of years ago, Ryan Strome was supposed to be the next guy that could score 30-plus goals a year for this team. He hasn't materialized. Anders Lee, not have a good year last year, got off to a terrible start, but now he's been really good, and I don't think it's any coincidence that the Islanders have been playing much better of late because of their getting production from a guy like Anders Lee, who's now playing on that first line with John Tavares. But even a guy like Tavares, getting to him, he has not had a great year either.
No.
He struggled at times, and a lot of it people say is, well, he doesn't have a winger to play with him. But you know what? John Tavares is a guy that year after year is close to 100 points, able to score 100 points in a season. He's not having a good year. He's a guy that has to pick up his play if this team wants to go on a run and make the postseason in the second half of the year.
I mean, John Tavares is the New York Islander.
He's the whole team.
He's the whole team.
And when he doesn't play well, the team doesn't win. And that's a flaw that falls on Gard Snow for the way this roster's built together.
He missed 1 year between playoff berths, and the team was the worst team in the NHL. John Tavares doesn't play well. He's not the superstar that he's supposed to be. The Islanders do not play well. Let's see if they can maybe go out and get a winger to go with him, try and get another elite scorer on that line. It's been a missing piece for a while now, along with the defense. I mean, oh my goodness.
It's been brutal.
Defense is awful. This team, you know what it truly is, that this team cannot close. They start off games well, but their holes just eventually come out.
I mean, how many times have they blown a game late in the third period?
In the third period.
I can't even count them on my fingers. It's been that many times.
They were tied with Columbus, who's having a great season right now, at 2-2 in the third, gave up four goals in the third period. It's inexcusable.
It's terrible.
You can't do that. The defense is horrendous.
And also, Jack Capuano, the amount of times that over the years, Islanders fans have chanted, fire Cappy, or Capuano's got to go.
He's only here because they won a round last year.
But it truly is remarkable. This guy will never be fired. I mean,
never.
Even when they were losing all these games, then they pull a five game winning streak out of you know what, and all of a sudden then they lose four in a row, and it's back to firing Capuano. I mean, this is a guy that will never be fired. I'm convinced he'll make it through the year, and I know they have new ownership coming in, but until I see this guy not coach the team, I'm convinced he's going to coach the team until he dies. It's amazing how I know they won a round last year, but he's like a cat with nine lives. He's like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He's like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He just finds a way to always maintain his job, whether you like it or not. He's going to be the coach.
I mean, the only reason he's still here is because they won a round last year for the first time in 23 years.
Now, do you think if they had
lost...
They
won a single game in the second
round. Let's say they lost to the Panthers in seven games last year, and they get off to this start. Is he the coach right now? Probably not.
Probably not.
I think that would have done it. I think you're right. I think the fact that they won a round and then lost in five games to the Lightning, I think that's the reason why he kept his job.
I'd like to think not. But as you said, Jake, unfireable, no matter how bad of a hair day he has every single day.
Death
he's unfireable.
Taxes and Jack Capuano remaining the head coach of the New York Islanders.
For an undisclosed reason.
We'll never know.
Maybe he's got blackmail.
Todd Bowles had an undisclosed illness. Well, you know, Jack Capuano
is the undisclosed illness of the Islanders.
He is the illness for the Islanders. But then we are running out of time right here. Thank you to all our callers and to all the listeners. I want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. The second hour of Sports Talk 1240 is coming up. And Ben, this was a lot of fun, my friend. Got a chance to co-host a little Sports Talk with you. Welcome to the studios here, and we'll do it again soon, I hope.
It's a lovely studio. I'd like to also wish everyone a happy Hanukkah as well.
Happy Hanukkah. Happy Festivus.
Happy Festivus for the rest of us.
Never forget.
Well, I don't have many problems with you people, though.
This has been Sports Talk 1240 on AM 1240 WGBB. Up next, Eric Getzoff will take you from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock right here on AM 1240 WGBB. Merry Christmas, everyone.
And a happy Hanukkah.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.